Hello and welcome to Charlie Foxtrot. We are a Stargate Universe podcast, and I am Cetra.
And I'm Boom.
And we are talking about sabotage.
Listen up, y'all, it's sabotage. Okay. I wish it was as cool as the Beastie Boys song.
It is not as cool as that.
Yeah, it's really strange. There's so many elements of this episode I truly enjoy, but the elements that I dislike in it really make me not want to watch this ever.
Well, and it's really, I don't know, the title being Sabotage kind of gives it away, like, because right. You don't really know what's happening.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know, it doesn't give away too much, right? Like, the words, so, I went for a while thinking, like, somehow the Lucian Alliance had taken over Lieutenant James or something like that. Like, it wasn't entirely clear to me who had sabotaged and why for a little bit.
We will learn together because there's, like, I don't know. This is my fourth time through this episode just recently, and I'm still always like, oh, and then that happens? Wait, what?
It's a really dense episode, but I think we can say that safely of pretty much every freaking episode in Stargate.
Yeah. Because it takes us an hour to an hour and a half to talk about 42 minutes of television, so.
Yeah, because it gives us, like, 3-second scenes that are so full of meaning. Well, anyways, Destiny sure is pretty as it flies.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's the first scene.
Ship is real lovely.
And we go straight to Young, feeling about the same about Eli and Chloe and Scott being gone as he did with Rush. Like, it's almost an identical shaving scene.
Yeah, it's this weird, very reserved and sort of oddly filmed sequence of, like, you know, Young being who he is inside his own little bubble and then having to go out. And even when he's talking to the whole crew, it's not like a big removed camera angle. It's like right up by Young.
Right. Trying to show how affected he is by all of this.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me in that scene, because, I mean, it's pretty much right after him looking upset and TJ calling him, is he starts to inform the crew about how fucked they are.
Yeah.
And then he says, you know, it probably means that we can't get, you know, Chloe and Armstrong, Eli Wallace, and Matthew Scott. And first of all, he doesn't finish the sentence, which is really telling. But second of all, he uses their full names. It's almost as if he's trying to separate himself from them.
And he uses Matt's full title. He says Lieutenant Matthew Scott, like the way you would at a funeral. Like,
right. I mean, that's what it, I thought that's what it was. Like, when she called him, it made it seem like they were just like, they gave up hope. Like, they're going to have a memorial service and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, of course,
Rush interrupts,
because Rush, not only Rush, but a bunch of other people, like Brody and Volker, are not at this meeting. They're off doing science things.
You know, it makes me think that, we've discussed this a little bit, but yeah, the idea that Rush hates Volker is totally a fanon thing. Like, Volker disagrees with Rush plenty in this episode. And he's not yelling it for him to get out of the room. He's not being mad that he's being disagreed with.
No, I mean,
you know, Volker is just putting his head down and working, just like the other guys are.
He dismisses Volker's opinion pretty quickly, but as we've discussed before, like, Volker's the kind of person that sort of talks through everything.
Yeah, he's just a spitballer.
And Rush is not, so he is just like, no, Brody's right, like.
Right.
So basically, somehow the ship is smart enough to know what useful assets are on a planet and stop for them, but not smart enough to realize that they'll all die if it jumps between galaxies.
Well, it actually goes into my Destiny is really an antagonist theory, because...
Absolutely.
Because Rush, like, says it right there. He's like, well, we are a secondary thing to it. And it wants to keep doing its mission. And until we get control, like, it doesn't matter. Like, sometimes it'll stop because it's not, that's on its way, right? And let's be fair, when it stops to, like, help them out, it's not doing a great job of it. It's, like, the most nominally helpful.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's some stuff here. I'm going to give you zero information on what's here. And you don't have access to my database. And you couldn't read it if you could. So figure it out, losers.
And, you know, you have a countdown because I need to do my mission. And this is how much time I think you're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm not, initially I was just as confused about the, like, well, I mean, it can stop at other places to help them survive, but it won't, you know, go charge at a star.
Rush sort of hand waves this explanation of, like, yeah, even though we just flew through a star, we've been through all this stuff, and, like, the ship is still super damaged.
I mean, I believe that it doesn't fully charge up. I don't know why it doesn't, but I can believe that. Like, maybe it only decides it needs to fill up so much to get to the next star. And then, of course, they start using all of its energy, especially with the Nakai attacking.
Yeah, well, and maybe, like, maybe its, you know, heat resistance and stuff isn't perfect. And maybe, you know, double the amount of time in the core of a star would damage the ship.
Yeah, or also the battery cells could be leaking, so maybe it does charge all the way up, but it can't hold a full charge anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely possible.
If only Rush had said it.
Yeah.
But I do like, I mean, I don't know how Rush would know, but I do like the, like, dude, like, our survival is not important to the ship.
Yeah. Like, the ship is here, the ship will try to keep us alive because that's sort of a part of its mission, but its mission is primary.
Right.
Until we have any kind of control to tell it that we're not just cats, right? Like,
right. It's interesting to me here, you know, as Rush is talking about how they're gonna not make it, and Young has his "when it rains, it pours" face on, Brody goes, well, how much are they gonna fall short? And I thought, why didn't Rush think to ask himself that question earlier? I feel like that's question number one. And he looks up and he's like, oh, that's a good question, Brody.
Yeah. Well, and I think because Rush, in classic Rush fashion, was trying to figure out a way to solve it himself,
right,
without, like, telling anyone or asking for help.
Right, but he seems, like, so, like, intrigued, where he's like, oh, you're right, it's only a couple percent, we just have to boost the efficiency in the drives. Like, why didn't you think of that earlier, Rush?
Yeah, well, because he's not a physicist. He's not an engineer.
He just knows that they fall short, he doesn't think...
Yeah, he was doing the math, and the math, every way he double-checked his math, didn't work.
And Brody's all like, you know you can boost efficiency
and Brody's like... We can fix it. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, we don't have to do a whole lot to get this going better.
Yeah.
It's just 5%, right? And then Volker is like, nope, 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 nope. We don't know shit about the drives, which I think he's got a good point.
He totally does.
And Rush listens to it.
But in this matter, Brody is topic expert. He's the engineer. Volker's not.
True.
Yeah,
but Brody also flipped his directions in episode one, so he's not good at ancient.
Well,
which
that's
could be
true.
Bad.
But he is good at math. Like, right. You know, he knows that it's 5%.
Yeah, you're right. He does that, like, immediately. Like,
oh yeah.
He's like, oh, okay, that's just like 5%. Yeah, that's not a big deal.
I assume Rush looked down, sent him all the math, and he just went, oh yeah, like, we're not falling short by, you know, it's not like they fall short of power 10% of the way into the jump and they're fucked. It's like, they make it almost all the way there.
Right. And that's like, to an engineer, that's like, yeah, it's still a fail, but that's like so close.
Can we make the ship lighter? Can we make the distance shorter? Can we, you know, boost
anything?
I wish
Lisa Park was in there because she would have been like, ah.
Yay.
Yeah, no problems.
5% is nothing.
And Brody could be like, well, because I love that dynamic. So in any case, Rush is like, I want Amanda Perry. I can't remember Amanda Perry ever showing up in any other Stargate.
I don't believe so. Specifically, Rush just rattles off like, you know, oh, there's several people that I can think of. And in my brain, I'm like, yeah, like Rodney McKay.
Yeah, I love how he doesn't.
Oh, God. Can you imagine? Rush and McKay cannot possibly get along. But, you know, Young says, who's the best? And, I mean, clearly, Mandy is the best in this situation.
It's not the first name that came to him, though. He came up with a lot of names.
Yeah.
Before he came to her.
He said half a dozen. And then he picked her to tell Young.
It's almost like he thought to himself, this can give her a chance to walk.
Well, and I think also, like, who would I like to work with again?
Right. Well, I mean, he's obviously good friends with her. Like, he's a totally different person when he's around her.
Yeah. They are on first name terms, as is going to be made apparent.
Obvious later.
Yeah, like I am pretty sure that the very first time, like she looks up and says Nick, and
Yeah.
that's the first time anybody has called him anything but Rush this entire series.
You know, no, Telford calls him Nick,
Does he?
doesn't he?
Oh,
I thought he does.
I don't think he has yet.
I think he does in Earth, because I remember him like sitting down with Rush and talking to him about, you know, how he didn't bring him with him, like how he didn't want him on the thing. And I think he said it in a condescending way. I'd have to go back and look, but I seem to recall him being like, "Come on, Nick."
Oh,
Like, I
maybe.
think it was only when there was just the two of them.
That could be. Okay. Well, either way,
Right.
people who are on this kind of familiar terms with Rush, and particularly, somebody for whom Rush will alter his entire behavior,
Right.
are few and far between.
I don't even think he has this, but the thing is when he was with Amanda on Earth, he was A going initially he was going through his wife dying. And then he was going through his wife's death. So I wonder if he was ever as happy and friendly as that in the past with her.
I assume that he tried for her because he is very aware of morale, even if he's not real great at doing anything about it. In a one-on-one interaction,
That's true, because he can be very nice to Eli
in a
one-on-one.
one-on-one, he's fairly comfortable adjusting, to say what people need to say or need to hear, that kind of thing.
I don't know.
But I mean,
I mean,
it's.
remember on time when Eli's all like, "We're gonna die."
Yeah.
No, I guess that's true. He
But that's the
does
thing.
start meeting him at
Eli.
his level.
Rush just shortcuts everything, right? And Eli was going through a freak out fit that there was nothing Rush could do about and was not helpful to them.
But Rush, and now that I remember Rush giving him like a little talk.
Yeah.
And
Like,
then,
he did as much as he could, and then he let Eli freak out because that's what Eli was gonna do.
All right. I mean, I guess I could accept that. I was thinking, I was like, there's plenty of times where I felt like he could have been nicer, but on one-on-one situations, you're right. He can change how he is.
Yeah, he's just not so great at doing like a large scale, group meeting kind of politicking like Young is, so.
Well, you know, the last time we saw him this happy is when he and Young were on that planet and he was looking at the
Yes,
Nakai
before he got murdered. I mean, before a rock slide fell on him.
Well, anyways, so you find out that her disabilities are she's confined to a wheelchair due to an accident when she was 11, and James volunteers because she desperately wants to see her family because, you know, life sucks on the ship. But I think it's
Yeah.
more that she wants to impress Young, and there's hints towards that later when she feels like she failed him.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was necessarily family. I think she's still trying to prove to Young that she
Yeah,
deserves his respect.
she was trying to be the person that, got it done, what needed to get done, and
She has claustrophobia, and that didn't work out so well.
yeah, well, and I mean, if you, a lot of people have nightmares that are equivalent to what she's agreeing to live with for, a couple of weeks, an unknown amount of time.
And later on, it says like she's had nightmares of being in that room, and it's obviously the Nakai. And they say that, you know, that there was the Nakai had managed to get the traces because she didn't wipe the memory, the communication stone. But the way she says that she's had those nightmares for a while makes me think it happened before this incident.
Yeah, it's all a little
The timeline's a bit wonky.
weird. But again, the communication stones are such a weird, hand-wavy pile of clusterfuckery. I love them, and they are a great plot device, and they're a great way of exploring these characters in some circumstances.
But in other
But holy
circumstances.
shit, are they problematic!
Oh yeah, they are. So anyways, Ray is like, "I can do anything because I'm Ray."
Yeah, Rey is basically like, "Yep, I don't care. I'll be fine."
She just wants to see Sharon again.
Yeah.
She wants off that ship, even if it means she can't really move the way she would like to move.
Yeah. I mean, for her, being at home is the most important part. So there's this adorable moment where Mandy gets to eat a food, and she says it's the first time she's fed herself anything. thing since she was 9, and that is heartbreaking.
Oh, as Rush is showing her around.
Yeah, as Rush is showing her around. We find out that, Rush turned off his radio while he was showing her around. And he has this, like, this look on his face, and he makes this little dismissive gesture when Mandy is like, oh, I got you in trouble. Then I'm like, Nicholas Rush, you were with a girl, and you snuck off, like, off the reservation.
He does, he's done it, but he will do it again. Remember when he's like, I'm taking a day off to go fuck my girlfriend in a holographic room in the chair.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I like to think that he was that way with Gloria. Like, you know, he was super, like, serious about his studies.
Oh, yeah, until and it was then... just like, you know, she's like, oh my god, don't you have to be grading, like, 100 finals? And he was just like, no.
Yeah, it's no problem. No. It was totally a problem.
Yeah, it was totally a problem for everyone but him.
I like seeing that side to him, but, I mean, as we'll get further with the Rush and Amanda thing... I know that I talked to you a little bit about it earlier,
yeah,
like yesterday, but I do find that relationship slightly problematic. I hate to admit.
Well,
but
yeah.
One thing that bothers me about that scene, though, is Amanda eating that fruit, because I'm like, hey, hold on, you don't fucking need that fruit.
Yeah.
They're on strict rations.
Yeah, like, did Ray already eat this morning? Then you don't get Ray? More food, bitch.
That was my thought. I was like, Ray already ate this morning.
But, I mean, they mentioned that these are fruit that not a lot of people like. Right. And that, like, most people spit them right back out again.
Right.
So maybe this is something, like, TJ's eating it, probably forcing herself to because she knows she needs the nutrients.
Right. I do like TJ seeing Rush this way because I always felt like she knew him in this capacity, especially in Water.
Yeah.
When she actually listens to him. She doesn't always follow what she says, but she at least listens to him, which he appreciates.
Yeah.
And I think she's always had that sort of like, I think you're not the shit Young thinks you are kind of quality.
And
to
she
her.
Definitely looks kind of like amused and interested that he's behaving right. So differently and that this person is special to him, which is cool.
Right. I like that. Next it's James walking away, right?
Well,
she like dodges out of the room.
Yeah, she sees Rush, you know, Ray's like, body, nope. Sees Mandy and like gets the fuck out real fast.
She's embarrassed.
She's embarrassed and Mandy tries to stop her and is like, wait, I know you, and nope, right on out.
Right. And then she stares at the camera, and that's when you find out she's been taken by the Nakai.
I mean, there is this weird moment, as it always is super weird with the Stones, of like dropping out of FTL before the Stones reconnect, where Mandy's back in her own body, and Ray is back collapsing on top of Rush on the floor because of turbulence.
There's a lot of the weird thing is, like, every time Ray comes back and is back in her body, I feel more sexual tension between her and Nicholas than I do with Amanda and Rush.
It may be because she's just a better actress.
Yeah, that could be. Like, you know, the collapsing on Rush's chest thing. Like, I know she has zero interest in him.
Yeah.
But, like, even, like, later when she's like, the ship's under attack. Like, I don't know. There's, like, this weird, like, connection between her and Rush. Maybe it's not sexual. I'm not going to say maybe. It definitely is not sexual. But there's more of a connection I feel between those two than I do feel between Amanda and Rush.
Yeah. I think they understand each other. They're the most savvy political movers on that ship.
I don't know. Ray's not done a great job with her maneuvering. And she did try and throw Rush under the bus, like, an episode ago.
Anyway. I want to be excited about something real quick. Because, so a bunch of people are coming into sick bay, and TJ is doing all this quick triage to, you know, try and get people safe. And Greer and Park show up together.
Yeah, they were definitely doing it.
Yup. And for once in the show, instead of it just being Park, Greer says, put us to work. What can we do?
Right.
And I'm like, yay. And yeah.
I love how he says that. I just love every line that Jameel Walker-Smith fucking delivers. Where he's like, TJ, put us to work. I'm like, I love it.
I love Greer. I love the ability to take command in a crisis situation and still deferring to the person who's actually in charge there, right? Because not right. only does TJ outrank him, but this is the fucking infirmary. She outranks everybody.
Right.
And I love that.
I liked it too. So anyways, they don't know what happened with the explosion, but they do know they're adrift.
Yeah.
I like that Volker is good with the Kino.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, if he was on the planet. Oh, actually, he was on the planet, wasn't he? With Eli and everyone. He just didn't go down. No, he wasn't. Never mind, he was.
He went down with James's team.
Later.
When they blew stuff up and caused more problems, and then he came back.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, okay, that's why I remember him on the planet.
Yeah.
I was like, no, wait, he wasn't in the initial team.
No.
But I like that Volker is also good with the Kino, so we have three people who are supposed to be good with the Kino. I'm not sure if Eli is.
Yeah.
But Riley and Volker are.
Yeah, well, Eli loves the Kinos. I don't know if he's good with them, but he does like them a lot.
Right, maybe his spatial awareness is not quite there. So, Franklin appears while everyone's being triaged.
Yeah, Franklin was, like, outside on the floor, somebody says.
Yeah, like, somehow he, like, walked somewhere.
Yeah, which is very weird.
Like, they never really touch on that. Because initially I thought whatever had taken over James might have taken Franklin over, too. Because I was trying to think, he must have used the communication stones at some point.
He probably did, but I don't believe we ever saw it explicitly.
Right.
But in the early days, remember, like, the communication stones were on basically all the time. Like, people got shifts to go home and,
exactly,
you know, see their families and take care of business and whatever.
So I'm wondering if maybe, I mean, supposedly they wiped the communication stones, but that's bullshit because an incursion, they still use, like, even if the communication stones have been wiped, they still somehow use the Telford memory patterns, right?
Well, yeah, and even though the stones were being wiped properly, Matt had the weird Telford dream about fucking Young's wife, right?
So it's wiping them. Like, I like how they want to blame James for not wiping. Like, it's so Young to be like, well, James didn't wipe it properly.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because what he's really mad at her is this thing that she volunteered to do, she then backed out on because it was more intense than she thought. And he can't right. be mad at her for that because it was fucking voluntary and screw him.
Right.
So he's mad at her for not wiping the stone data correctly. Whatever.
So I guess then we both agree then the Nakai must have taken Franklin too.
Or tried or something. Yeah.
Or he sensed it and tried to stop it or something like that. Because it's...
Or he was trying... I mean, isn't the whole, like, overall arc of this that he ends up convincing them to put him in the chair?
Yeah, like, he's trying to get to... Well,
so
that's what I was thinking.
Maybe he was trying to get to the chair.
But, like, why now?
Because he overheard the conversation. Like, he probably heard people talking. Because, I mean, basically what this is...
Oh, about the 5% and 6% thing.
Yeah, about... Even if it's not that, about, like, you know, we're all going to die if we don't get control of the ship. And he believes that he can grant them control of the ship.
All right. Which one do you believe? I'm going to stick with my Nakai thing.
I think what's going on with Franklin is separate.
Okay. It would have been cool if they could have addressed that a little bit more.
Well, yeah, it could be cool if they at any point addressed, like, oh, we've had this person in a coma who's actually been conscious this whole time.
Right, like, they're not surprised that he was conscious. That's what I was surprised
about.
Yeah,
and I'm like, wait, did we know this? Like,
right.
We knew this guy wasn't just in a coma, he was, like, a vegetable.
I mean, because I remember there was an episode where he doesn't show up at all, but they comment on how Franklin is just a vegetable right now.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have a really hard, terrible conversation right now, too.
Hmm.
Why isn't anyone considering stopping feeding the vegetable?
Oh.
Like, we're in a situation where that could mean...
Life or death.
Life or death to other people.
Well, this is... So James is feeding him. Like, before then, I think they felt that they had enough rations.
Yeah. Well, I know, it's... like, James has spent some time with him. Park has spent some time, like, you know, caretaking.
Right, but in this episode, it's only James who's feeding him. And I think it's because she feels very guilty about not being able to live through the being Mandy's body.
Oh.
I think that is directly corollary why she's so obsessed yeah. with taking care of Franklin.
She wants to do good for one person because she couldn't do the thing that was needed for
right.
the greater good.
She only had, and also she only had 5 seconds in that body, and knows how awful it was. And
oh,
wants to
well, that's totally
make it easier.
That's true.
I mean, they never explicitly state that, but it seems very...
That's true.
The parallels are too obvious for that to not be a part of it in some way, even if it's not how I'm describing it.
Yeah. Interesting. That's an interesting parallel. I like that.
And she's mashing up the bitter fruit. So maybe she's trying to, like, make him think it's gross or something. Like, get some sort of reaction, because she's convinced there's something there.
Interesting. So the end of the infirmary stuff is, obviously, a gate dials in. There's an incoming wormhole. And I'm totally bypassing the chain of command.
I know. Rush, isn't it interesting that Rush says, Greer, come here, and Greer does?
Rush calls Greer directly, and off Greer goes.
That's so weird.
Well, because of a few things. One, that's where Greer wants to be. If there's a fucking incursion, he is going to be there with a gun.
Right.
Two, Rush just completely bypassing the, like, I should tell Young, and then Young should assign a team, and then Young will be sad because Scott's not on the team and have feels, and then decide to go with Greer anyway, who's the best person for the job, so I'll just call Greer.
Well, I don't think any of that. I think it was really just, I'm here, why waste a call to Young? Let's just get Greer here now, and then I'll inform Young, like, why?
Yeah.
But, like, what's weird to me is, like, he calls Greer for security purposes, and it sounds sort of scared. And then he's like, eh, it's no worries. Like, do you think he figured it out after? Or maybe he saw the gate. Oh, that's probably what it is. He probably saw the gate address dialing in and was like, oh, you know what? This is Eli and Chloe. I wish I had thought about the fact that us dropping out of FDL would make it possible for us to get them.
I think it's a thing where he's like, I'm going to believe, because he still believes in the ship, right? They don't know that it's sabotage yet.
Right.
That, you know, this is probably a part of, you know, the ship trying to give us time to solve this. But just in case it's something awful, I want people with guns here.
You think he thinks the ship blew itself up to save those three instead of just stopping?
Well, they don't know that, they don't really know that anything blew itself up yet. They just know it was a malfunction of some kind.
Well, that's true.
Because they don't know that there's that much damage to the engines until they actually get outside.
That's true.
So at the moment, like, yeah, I mean, it's weirder than the normal thing the ship does.
Yeah.
But I think probably, you know, I'm sure that's not his top explanation. I'm sure he wouldn't tell anyone that.
I think he just saw the gate address and thought that is a place that Eli and Chloe and Matt would have tried to go to.
Could have gotten to. Well, yeah, I mean, this is Rush, right? He works fast. So wormhole came, like, signal came in that there was going to be a wormhole opening. He called Greer. By the time Greer walked across the ship, which was maybe 5 or 10 minutes, he's had time to look at the gate addresses and realize that, like, you know, it's back in the direction they came from, and there's a direct chain of planets from the last place they knew where Eli was.
And they're still within reach. Yeah. It's just that now they're not in FTL. They can get them. It's very anticlimactic getting those three back. Like, you'd think that there would be more.
Well, yeah, you're going from this really high stress, like, triage of all these injured people to, like, Greer going, oh, no, it's fine. And then it just be return of the long lost heroes.
I mean, yes, I agree with that part, but I'm also saying, like, the tension of losing them completely.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I honestly thought, I didn't know if they were going to bring them back at all, but I thought that if they were going to, it was going to be a couple episodes down the line, and it was going to be a really tough situation. And just to have them, like, come in, like, I still think it's beautifully crafted how it happened. Like, you know, the dropping out of FDL, of course they can come in, and, you know, it's just, it makes sense. It's crafted nicely, but the tension to it is feels a little strange to me. The balance of the tension is not there. Anyways, Eli, Chloe, and Scott come back, and my favorite thing in the world happens when Eli hands Rush's glasses back to him.
Aww.
Eli looks so sweet, and Rush is so taken aback.
And I love that, like I guess for Eli and Scott and Chloe, they've just been on this planet for, like, you know, 12 or 15 hours waiting, and they've been fine. But, like, that Eli kept the glasses, even not knowing if they'd be able to get back.
Oh, you're right. It's like a symbol of I was hoping you would
save
us.
Yeah, of, like, of faith, kind of. Like, well, Rush needs these, and, you know, and I'm going to see him again, so I should keep them.
You think it was 12? I wonder how long they were there.
Yeah, I mean, it was long enough for the science team to figure out they were headed out of the galaxy and that they weren't going to stop again, for another morning to have passed where Young was waking up and shaving.
We don't know how many mornings passed. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it can't have been that many hours because at FTL speeds, like, they would have been out of the range of that Stargate.
Right.
Unless
I guess so.
Eli kept moving them forward to unknown planets, trying to, like, catch up to Destiny.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, because he said they stayed.
Oh, okay. Then, then it can't have been very long at FTL at all.
Okay. No, that's a good point. All right. Well, Young is so happy.
Yeah.
I like that Eli's like, I was like a third wheel. And I was like, oh my god, what was Matt and Chloe doing while you
Having
were there?
Sex in the dirt like animals.
Probably. I think they definitely were, because the look they traded with each other was like, we definitely got caught.
Children.
I feel like we should probably wait with Ray and Sharon stuff, because it's always like really small bits.
Yeah, it's small and it's a little... anyway.
So I guess the next scene then is Franklin getting fed by James. Apparently James had enough time to talk to Rush, because she obviously thinks there's something there that Rush could use. Because I don't know why else she would talk to Rush about him, you know, having a brain in there.
Yeah, it's weird to me. Why would Rush even, like, listen to anything James had to say?
Right?
About Franklin, who's now useful. I mean, I guess, except for...
Well, I mean, with Amanda there, it tempers him a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, and he still has a little guilt over what happened to Franklin, so maybe if you mention Franklin, like, he listens.
No, yeah, I can see that. Well, TJ is talking to James like she actually cares again, unlike last episode.
Yay!
James can't sleep, dark room. I mean, here's the thing, like, it sounds like it's been longer than that, right? So if they've only been at FTL for like a night, right?
In the morning.
It's can't sleep sounds like it's been a longer thing than just one night.
Yeah. I mean, we started this out saying that the timeline is confusing and weird, and that is going to continue to be true.
Right.
Like, somehow James has had a long period of time where she's been undergoing a lot of challenging stuff, and yet... they were still close enough that an accidental drop out of FTL meant that Eli could still dial in. I will note that when Young comes into the infirmary to check on them, he is in battle armor. Which means that, like, the entire military went hardcore, this is an incursion at an unknown gate dial.
Right.
So good for them, being on point.
Yay. But, anyways, back to James real quick.
Yeah, sorry. Like,
I just don't know how she would be able to mistake, you know, let's say 8 hours of being in a room by herself while the Nakai do whatever they're doing as sleeping. Because, I mean, that kind of nightmare, it can feel like 8 hours, but it's never 8 hours. It's like two.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how she can't differentiate. So I think these dreams are somewhat unrelated. And then because she already had those dreams, when it actually happened to her... she was unable to tell the difference. And the one time the Nakai took her over, she was not asleep.
Yeah.
She was awake and walking. So it's a little confusing.
Yep. All of that's true.
Okay. They just had plot holes. Okay.
Yep. I have no good explanation. I would love to come up with something clever.
You're usually so good at justifying things. Okay, well, let's do the next. Ming-Na acting like Amanda Perry, and I love it. Ming-Na is the best actress ever.
Yeah.
She does Amanda better than Amanda does.
She's so good. Sorry, Eli looks so confused.
He does. Ray's not... Well, Ray's been friendly with him before, but not like that.
Well, Mandy smiles all the time.
Right. And, well, Ray does too, but it's always kind of Wayne or Juan.
Yeah, it's not, like, showing her teeth and, like, anyway.
Right.
Yep, maybe not best actress ever.
How did Amanda hear the term math boy? Like, does Rush call him math boy when he's not around?
my assumption is that she and Rush were exchanging communications when he was on Icarus.
Eli was barely on Icarus.
She was in the, like, Icarus Project Science Team Slack because Rush added her to it. And right. So she saw other people referring to him as Math Boy.
Yeah, but Eli was only a part of everything for a very small amount of time for him.
That's true. It was like a day.
So, I mean, either she heard it from the soldiers or she heard it from Rush. And I think it would be hilarious if Rush is just like, ugh, let Math Boy handle that.
Yeah. Rush or Brody.
Yeah. I could see Brody
because
calling
I can
him
see,
Math Boy.
We know that Rush and Brody have this very, like, silent, functional working relationship side by side. And right. I can see Amanda falling right into that with them.
Well, I was going to actually note later, I think it's interesting, like, as we've noted many, many times, like, Rush and Brody, they don't need to talk to know what's going on. Amanda and Rush have to talk quite a bit to get to where they're going.
Well, because they have very different areas of expertise. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, with Rush giving people what they need one-on-one, like, Mandy likes talking. I assume when it's much harder for her to talk, actually.
That makes sense.
That they do work mostly in silence. And right. He is good at understanding her. But in this body and being able to talk and interact, I assume she's enjoying the fuck out of it.
I bet she is. So, yeah. Well, anyways, Eli doesn't know Rush's name, which just shows how aloof Rush has been.
Yeah.
And then Eli is sarcastic about solving the proof being a good thing. And Amanda just looks at him. She's like, I would give anything to be here.
Yeah.
Then she does something really socially weird to me. Like, she just starts telling Eli, this guy she just met, about having a crush on Rush. A Rush crush.
Yeah. Well, it's weird. It's weird because I assume that she has been working very hard to kind of watch and understand the social situation here. And so maybe, like, she got kind of the implication that Eli is, like, good for talks about feels.
Uh-huh.
And decided that that would be the right thing to do?
I mean, he's not open to her to talk about anything.
No.
Like, if you read
his body
language
is all super, super shut down.
It's like, please don't talk to me. I just had a rough time.
Yeah.
And it's not her that he doesn't want to talk to. He just doesn't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah, no, he needs some time to be Eli.
Right. He's got the headphones in, which is classic don't talk to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's just not reading any of the hints.
That's a little weird.
Yeah, a little bit weird. But then, yeah, and she's like, she even says it to, she's like, you know, after his wife died, I hit on Rush. I was like, that's also weird.
Yeah.
You knew him when his wife was dying.
Given her situation, how odd that she would be like, well, yeah, he had just finished, like, nursing and caring for this person. And so I tried to imply to him that he should, like, be my romantic partner. Even though that would almost certainly, you know, necessitate him nursing and caring for me as well.
Right.
Though she does have this really good helper person, which is awesome.
Right. Well, I mean, I think with him, I think she can have a crush on him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, like, the way she's dealing with it socially is what I find unacceptable. Like, you can't help what you feel.
Well, and it's, like, odd that everything we know about her, that she's incredibly intelligent, that she, you know, she has degrees and all this information, and she's, you know, background checked to work at the SGC and be working on developing this new technology, one would think that she is fairly, like, savvy socially.
No, nerds are socially awkward, right? Aren't they?
Well, clearly she is.
Right. I mean, I hate it when nerds are always like, well, I'm a nerd, so I'm socially awkward. And I was like, you know what? I'm a huge fucking nerd, and I'm not that socially awkward.
Yeah, like, well, you don't have to be. Like,
right. You just treat human reactions the way you treat everything else you love.
And I wonder, I mean, I wonder if it's just that existing, you know, in her mind and in her body consumes such a large amount of her time, and people react so differently around her. Because unfortunately, like, most humans do around someone in a wheelchair at all, let alone with the breathing apparatus and everything, like, they're going to behave very differently.
Right. It's not right, but it's what's going to happen.
She hasn't seen a lot of, you know, normal people interacting to learn to read social cues and stuff like that.
I would go with that. I would go with that for sure.
So she, in some ways, she is like this, you know, 10 or 15-year-old girl.
No, it's definitely true, because there's a lot of experiences that she couldn't have.
Yeah.
on account of almost full paralysis.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I like that she immediately triggered, like, that's how low her self-esteem is when Eli is surprised about him having a crush on Rush. Like, she immediately goes, like, why? Because people with disabilities aren't people. And he's like, wait, no, no, no. It's totally just because Rush is fucking weird.
Yeah, I didn't mean like you. That. I meant him.
But I also like that she has that trigger because it really hits home that she's...
Yeah.
Like, she's been thinking a lot about how unfairly she gets treated.
Yeah, and that's her life, and it has been for a real long time.
Right. Anyways, the overload has happened. They think that if they can just bypass that engine, efficiency all around will be better. I have no idea if that is an engineering thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an engineer either.
Right.
If Brody says it works, I believe him. But
yay, Brody!
It seems really... I mean, what we see by the end of the show is that basically, like, blowing off a chunk of the ship.
Right.
And that, to me, I'm like, look at all those resources. Like,
right.
All that metal, all that technology. Like, how the hell do you know that the ship that you still can't control is going to know how to compensate for that engine, and you're not going to be constantly, you know, curving slightly more to starboard?
Right. Well, which, that's why Rush is like, well, we probably should use the chair.
Yeah.
It's almost like he held that back until they did it.
Yeah. Well, because obviously everything with the chair is very touchy. Right. It's a hot-button issue for Young. It's a hot-button issue for Rush. He tries to only bring it up when it's going to be advantageous to fight that fight.
Right. And then in this case, Young is like, I'll sit in it myself. And Rush gets quiet. And I think it's because he's like, you're not going to know what to do in the chair.
Yeah, like...
You're just gonna die.
Do we need to talk about John Shepard right now? Because that didn't work out so great.
John Shepard? No, it would work fine with John. You're talking about Carson. Carson's the one that accidentally, like, sent the torpedo.
Oh.
Trying to kill everybody.
Maybe.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, because
Shepard just, like... Isn't there some kind of control chair thing in Atlantis, too, though?
Yeah, but Shepard's, like, intuitive at it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's because Shepard's a fucking... genius.
No, he is.
He's actually, I know.
Okay. I was like, you know, he's like, in, like yeah, his bonding like is so mad Mensa that he's level in Mensa. Like you. I know.
Yeah. And it makes McKay insane that he is like one of the cool kids and also smart.
Right?
No, I do want to watch more of Atlantis because of reasons, but...
Anyways, back to this.
Sorry. Yeah, sure, we're gonna blow off a chunk of the ship's engine system and that's gonna help.
Oh, I like the next scene with TJ talking to Young, where she's like, I would like to go to the planet that Eli just came from, because I need to get off the ship for a little bit.
Yeah.
And when Young says no, I think she's absolutely justified to say what she said.
To play the card and be like, well, I want to know where, you know, I would have to raise our child.
Right.
Because what do you say to that? I mean...
You say what Young says. Oh, I didn't mean that.
Yeah.
He totally fucking meant that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she gets the permission, but I'm glad that she is able to at least play that card. And then she's like, I'll be careful. And I just really, really love where Eli's like, hey, why are we sending the Kino through? We just came back from there. We know it's safe.
Yeah.
And I think this is a total lampshade. I think the writers were like, well, fuck, why would they send the Kino through? But I like that Young is like, we got to do it by the books.
Yeah.
And he is very by the book, isn't he, though, if you think about it.
And I think that's part of, you know, why Scott looks up to him so much, because Scott obviously is very...
He's by the book.
Yeah, by the book and focused and, you know, doing things the right way.
But it sucks because the Nakai are there. Good thing that the Kino...
Unfortunately, that means they lose a fucking Kino.
Right.
Which...
Yeah, but there's so... It's like a gumball machine. They have enough Kinos.
Well, yeah, but that's technology that the enemy now has.
Oh, you're right. Shit. Eli should have at least brought it back through the event horizon to destroy it.
Yes, but Eli may not know how Stargates work that way.
I mean, he certainly wasn't paying attention through all the...
Yeah, through all the videos. His training montage.
Speaking of montages, how about the... another Life Sucks montage aboard the Destiny. I think this is our third or fourth one.
Yeah.
So many Life Sucks montages.
I don't think of them as life sucks montages. They're more just like
survival.
Yeah, like this is how people are when they're just existing.
You don't think that this is the worst day since yesterday montage is a life suck montage?
Both are looking at the gross porridge and life doesn't suck for Mandy and Rush.
No, yeah, it's true. They're quite happy. I like Brody. I feel like, and this is not just because I accidentally convinced myself to ship Rush and Brody, but I feel like Brody going off on his own and making a still is a little bit because he's like, my partner.
Yeah.
My science bud's not fucking talking to me anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch Rush make googly eyes at this girl for the next 6 weeks.
I'm going to be productive.
I need alcohol to do it. Well, no, it's also, okay, I'm going to have a Tony Stark feel all over you for a second.
Okay. I don't like how you worded that, but okay.
This is the kind of thing that somebody with a mind like Brody's does.
Right.
You know, when I'm super frustrated and I just need to focus, I go cut out pieces and put together a quilt.
Right.
When Tony Stark needs to figure out his shit, he goes down in his workshop and he tears things apart and he builds something new.
Right.
And, like, Brody has access to this stuff, and he is going to make a thing, and it is going to produce something functional.
Yep. That is totally Brody.
Yep. And that is what is happening, and it is my favorite part of this whole freaking montage.
I love it. I also like that the montage shows how much time is passing because Greer gets the haircut.
Yeah, and you see the civilians running again. Like, right. You realize that means, you know, stuff like, yeah, Greer getting his head buzzed and stuff is like, that means that, like, you know, the military has time. I mean, right. Brody has time to distill all this stuff, too, which, like, that actually does take some time.
Right.
And he gets really fucking smashed.
But here's where the timeline is wonky again, because it looks like a couple weeks have gone by, because Greer's hair has grown more than it was before, right?
Yeah.
But why did it take the Nakai so long for them to find the ship? Because if they were on that planet, they should have only been, like, 15 hours behind in FTL.
You're not wrong. they may not have... Stargates don't give spatial coordinates,
Yeah, but the Nakai taking over James would have had spatial coordinates.
Only if she touched... Oh, wait, you're right. I was going to say only if she touches the stones again, but...
And I'm relatively certain that you can't, like, ferment alcohol as quickly as 15 hours or so.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure you can't because I watched a lot of MASH.
Yeah.
And if they could have made that much alcohol that fast, they would have been way drunker all the time.
Right. So I guess it was just lucky happenstance for the story that when they're like, oh, the Nakai can find us. Shit, get ready. And then the Nakai do come. Like, I guess it was just a coincidence, but...
Yeah.
But I do like that Chloe and James drink at the bar.
Yeah, they're definitely some of the like, early...
Well, I'm saying I like it because James had that whole episode, last episode, about loving Matt and not having him. And next episode is going to be about her being angry about her unresolved feelings for him.
Oh.
Because she, like, hallucinates killing him and whatnot.
Oh, right, because we're coming up on the Tick episode.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's so bizarre. It's like they keep trying to make her out to be jealous, but not...
Yeah, I mean, I'm back to just believing, like, 2 out of 4 writers agree that Vanessa James is in love with Matthew Scott. The other two don't give a shit and just write her as a character.
Right. As someone who has strong female friendships, and, like, Chloe talks to her like they're friends, you know?
Yeah.
Later on, she's like, you know, this sounds awfully Nakai-ish because Chloe has the Nakai knowledge.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're talking about the, you know, the dreams, and that's obviously something Chloe has sympathy for. And...
Right. So, that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's been enough time that not only has Brody built this still, but he's found a space for it that is now, like, a bar.
Right.
For people to hang out at.
And the robots fix things, and yeah, it's just, there's a lot of times has gone by. It has to have. Amanda and Rush go and get a drink, because apparently they think they have time.
Yeah.
And they talk about coffee.
They talk about how Rush needs coffee.
I like his understatement about going crazy when he didn't have it.
Yeah. Super.
She, like, laughs it off, and I'm like, no, he legit went crazy.
Yeah. He went insane and screamed at people and then passed out.
But then, so here's where I just have to know that Amanda just doesn't have social cues. Because she and Rush walk back afterwards, right?
Yes.
After the bar. And, I mean, I'm not going to say Rush doesn't have feelings for her, because I always felt like he had the possibility of falling in love with her. She just did some stupid things. Like, you know, writing a code to make him love her. Or, like, he couldn't leave unless he loved her, because she needed that validation, right? Those kind of things are too immature for him to be with, honestly.
Yeah.
And so this whole thing here where she's like, I mean, it was really mature when she was like, hey, do you want to come back to my room? We've talked about consent issues with communication stones for a while. And I felt that was mature, and he kind of like says, yeah, but almost immediately he's like, no. And she gets super coercive, like, hey, this is the only time I can have sex. I really want to do it in this lesbian's body.
Yeah, in this lesbian's body, almost certainly without protection. Right. On a ship where, like, having to give birth or even being pregnant could be horrifically dangerous.
Right?
Oh,
so, like, let's just give Ray that problem.
Why? Why is the show even going to this place?
Apart
from,
I don't know, it's so...
They wanted to watch Robert Carlyle make out with somebody.
If you listen to the commentary, all the actors are, like, uncomfortable watching this scene.
Oh.
Incredibly uncomfortable. They don't really necessarily say why, so it could just be because they know what's going to happen. But, like, I'd like to think, because I like to put everyone in the same mindset as me, that it's just, like, it's just an uncomfortable scene. Like, I think Rush says, yeah, out of pity, almost.
Yeah, I mean, because
and
how
also,
can you...
he does need sex, but...
Yeah, how can you not say yes when somebody plays that card?
Right.
There's some really cool cinematography of using Ray's reflection with Mandy still in the foreground.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Which I love. I'm going to love it every time they do it.
And that jerks him out of it a little bit. But he was already saying no before.
Yeah, he was already
saying
no, I can't. And we did skip a tiny little scene where after drinking together, like, Chloe goes with James to talk to Young.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when James says she thinks she's the one that damaged the ship.
And then it cuts back to Amanda and Rush,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, he just tells her, like, flat out, like, it's the Gloria thing. It's the same thing that why he wouldn't understand her flirtation before. And it's also weird when they're walking together, she goes, you know, I was flirting with you after Gloria died.
Yeah.
And you didn't get the hint. Like, that's really not something you say to someone.
It's, again, her not maybe 100% having all the social skills there. Because, you know, that is something that I might have said to someone when I was 14.
Right.
You know, before you've had that, you've made that mistake in public and someone's been
hell,
like...
as young as 20, I definitely had.
Yeah.
Like, oh, did you know I had a crush on you? Thinking, like, oh, maybe if they know... But, like, protected by the fact that it's not that anymore. But, like, oh, if they knew that I had one, maybe they'll pursue me. Like, I've definitely thought that when I was, like, 20.
Well, yeah. And
now that someone's done it to me, I'm like, oh, that's weird. That's creepy.
Yeah, and you only learn that by either having said that and somebody being like, that's not a good idea.
Yeah,
or feeling it yourself. So,
yeah.
I feel for her. I do.
And
in a lot of ways, I wish that this could happen. But also, no.
I blame the writers for not doing it properly.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm totally all for it. It can happen. It's just the way they go about it makes me so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable. Especially in the next season.
I mean, Rush sells the crap out of this. Like,
right. Well, that's because Bobby Carlyle is, like, the best actor ever.
So good.
Right.
And then TJ walks in on them, and it's even more awkward.
I felt like it was awkward before she walked in, honestly, when they zoom out on it.
Yeah.
It's like, and then TJ comes in, and it's more awkward. But she knocked and came in. She didn't wait. She just came in.
Yep.
And then she's like, shit hit the fan.
Yep.
They talk about whether or not the Nakai broadcasted where they are. And then more Ray stuff, which we'll talk about in just a second.
Yeah.
Then I love the music in this so much. I just love the music in Stargate Universe as a random side note.
Yeah,
so fucking much.
I love the way it's used. I love what they choose to use.
It's so, the thing is, it's written by the guy who does most of the music for the other Stargates. It's such a different kind style, though. It's so barren. And I was going to tweet him how beautiful his music was, and he died a couple years ago. So oh, that's no. sad. But Destiny is very pretty, floating, adrift.
Yeah.
Young is writing letters, but I didn't check to see to who. But it's what you always wanted him to do, is write letters. And when they're all going to die.
Well, that's true.
It's like he's uncomfortable with showing himself, like on the Kino footage and stuff, that he doesn't like that. But if he writes, it's fine.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, from the point of view of a guy that can darn socks and is, right. like we said, very kind of by the book and a little more old school, like, that makes sense.
Right.
Right? Like, I mean, because the Kino is the equivalent of Eli whipping out his iPhone and being like, hey, record this video for Instagram. Like,
right.
Young doesn't give a shit.
Right? And it's awkward. Like, sometimes you can express yourself better through text than you can face-to-face. That's why sometimes I hate it when people are like, you should always ask someone out or dump someone face-to-face. And I'm like, no, not always.
A lot of times, and it depends on the person, but, like, you can say really stupid shit face-to-face, and what you say can be misinterpreted. Whereas mm-hmm. if you have time to write it down and edit it and think about it, you can be a lot more thoughtful and convey what you mean.
I mean, this is a bit tangential, but when I was dating Yuya and I had to break up with him, I felt that I couldn't, because I had to do it in Japanese...
Oh, especially in a foreign language. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I just couldn't do it face to face because I knew he was going to argue with me. And he did with the texts.
Yeah.
But I had, like, this is funny. I had my friend Mayuko, like, reading it over to make sure that my Japanese was correct and there was no, like, room for misinterpretation.
I mean, I started and ended and started and ended again my relationship with Jessica over, like, via chat. Right. So...
Right. I mean, like, I think some face-to-face is good for certain things. Like, someone I dated for 3 months, I felt like I owed them a face-to-face breakup. But, like, you know, when you only saw someone for a month, I don't owe them that.
Yeah. You know?
Especially if I only, like, went on 3 dates with them. I can just text them and say that. Like, it's actually better for both people, right?
Well, yeah, because otherwise you're just, like, asking them to make time in their schedule. Again.
So to have you watch them be hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not fun for anyone. Anyways, so yeah, Rung writes letters because I'm imagining he's much better writing than he is saying what he feels.
Yeah.
He sets up the defense. He's pretty badass. James decides not to be a part of the defense, even though she's military, and continues to feed Franklin.
Yeah, Franklin has some serious reactions and manages to move.
Right.
And they have him, like, he looks much more, like, flushed and alive, mm-hmm. which is cool.
Yeah, but he's still sweating a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Young tells Amanda not to wait too long before she transfers. And Rush is all like, you know, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. I'm like, what? You know you're going to die. He's a better liar than we give him credit for.
I wish two things. I was only going to wish one, and then James ran into the room. I wish we had gotten to see Young in the chair.
Yeah, so he could experience
it. So he could experience it, and we can see what his interaction with Destiny is.
Yeah.
Two, I wish James had had a better bra when she came on board this ship. Meanwhile, moving on.
Are you talking about she runs in and she's like, because they go to the chair, right?
Yeah, she runs into the chair room, and I'm like,
Franklin said chair.
Yeah, she's like, Franklin spoke. He said something about the chair. I'm like, sweetheart, like, be more specific.
I'm like, that doesn't mean anything, man. But he grabs her wrist, which is something.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't just speak, like, he full-on moved, and...
It's so weird, though, like, with Young and Rush, like, because Young's like, okay, tell me what to do, and Rush is like, I can't tell you what to do until you sit in there. And then it's all, like, you're not gonna get it, dude.
Yeah. No, just Rush trying to explain, like, here's what it's gonna be like inside there, and I don't even really know because I've only been in there in my dream interface.
Right.
Like...
With the firewall buffer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this will be interesting. But they go and talk to Franklin and give him a choice. Squeezes their hand, right? To say, this is what I want. Oh, and he nods. That's right. He nods.
Yeah.
I have a note that says, Scott ordering people is awesome.
Well, yeah. I mean, Young delivered this address that was like, I'm going to sit in the chair. You are to follow Scott's orders as though they were mine. He is in command. Like, because basically Young is like, oh good, I'm dead now, finally. there's hand gripping and nodding from Franklin.
I love how Rush bends down and talks to Franklin.
Yeah, like...
there's affection there.
Yeah, down on his knees and grabs his hand. And
it's like, it's so weird that nobody sees what Mandy sees in him.
Yeah.
And it's not totally weird because he is a bit of a dick. He's a bit of a dick in the beginning. But a lot of those people knew him before the Destiny shit happened. He couldn't have been that awful all the time on Icarus.
Yeah, I mean, especially when he had his cigarettes and his coffee.
Right.
I assume he was chill at least like 10% of the time.
I mean, he was chill with Colonel O'Neill. He stopped taking Eli's shit when they got to Icarus. I mean, sorry, then they got to the Destiny.
And then the thing happens with Franklin. He opens his eyes back up with all the clamps and stuff still engaged and tells them to go.
I thought that was... I didn't know what go meant. And I'm glad that they understood it.
Yeah, like, Young and Rush mean, like, leave the room.
I thought go meant, like, he was telling the ship to go.
I'm not sure. Like...
I think the implication is the room got way fucking cold. They thought he meant go.
Yeah.
I don't know why all that stuff happened. Is that how that absorbed him and his clothing into the AI interface, or what?
Yeah, I'm not... sure, like, because his body is gone when they get back, like,
yeah.
I guess so. I mean, I hope, ideal situation, his consciousness was uploaded into the AI, or the ship was just like, yo, dude, here's how you ascend.
Right.
Like, get out.
You know, I like the ascension idea, but I also, I'm just assuming because when Rush is interfacing with the bridge.
Yeah, he sees Franklin.
Franklin comes back. And so I'm wondering, I've always been curious, like, Gloria obviously is a manifestation of whatever he created in the ship's AI with his memories.
Yeah.
But I always wonder if Franklin, because he seems to have a lot more autonomy of thought, I always wonder if he is still Franklin.
Yeah.
But no one seems to care about getting him from the ship. They only care about Mandy and, shit, what's her name?
Gin. They all three get fixed and ascended in Force Over Distance. I don't know who else you're talking
Force
about.
Force Over the Distance only is the only ones that care about what happened to Franklin.
Oh, well, I care about what happens to Franklin.
I do, too. I liked Franklin from the moment he got shot and was a bitch.
I did not like that part, but...
No, I thought it was interesting, though. I liked that they went that far. Anyways, so the FTL powers up because of something.
Yeah, something Franklin did. There's this moment that's actually a weird reversal of what happened before, where it's Ray back on the ship for a second.
Right.
And, like, Rush actually looks disappointed when Mandy's back.
Yeah.
Where he has this moment of, like, oh, okay, I'm back to awkward town again.
Right? It feels like he is grad student, which is not fair because she's definitely as smart or smarter than he is. But there's that definite, like, co-ed hitting on me. What do I do? Like,
yeah.
Like, the police don't stand so close to me feelings going on there.
Oh, I have so many feelings about that song, you don't even know.
Here's my question, though. I feel, because I think it's really beautiful when, you know, in the original awkward scene, he says, I just had to relive that all over again. So, like, I can tell myself it's been years, but it's just happened again.
Yeah.
Even if that never happened, do you think he would have done it? I think to him, Gloria dying is something that's been going on in his head every day since it happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think he might have made it further before bugging out.
Right.
You know, out of that sense of obligation and wanting to, you know, offer her the opportunity to have this experience, I think he still would have freaked out.
Yeah. I was thinking that too. I was thinking, like, I think that memory thing is an excuse. I think when he was saying, I can tell myself it's been years, but I can't because I'm reliving it. I thought that was the most honest he was right there. I feel like He knows that he should be over it. He knows.
Yeah.
And he's just never going to be. And that's why he tried to get rid of those memories.
Yeah.
Because they're still bothering him.
I think in all honesty, like, he knew that that was the card he could play that would get her to back off.
Right.
And maybe we're not giving Rush enough credit. Maybe Mandy isn't. Like, maybe he freaking knew that she was trying to put the moves on him way back when.
Yeah, he would not tell her that he... Okay, yeah, I've had people tell me, like, oh, I tried to put the moves on you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I didn't notice. I'd noticed.
Yeah.
I'm not a fool.
And Rush is not dumb.
Rush knew. He had to have, because he has social acuity, unless it's with Young. He sucks at Young and Greer.
Yeah, he sucks at being military, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man, I feel bad that we're being so... I'm not going to say unfair to Mandy, but we're just not...
She had... Okay, I remember very clearly the first time through loving her character and everything about all of this.
Yeah.
And then the more that I think about the issues with the stones and the way she, like, handles herself specifically...
Right.
Within these circumstances, you know, that exist, it's just not great. She's not written great. And
so do you remember when I first watched these episodes and I was like, Mandy weirds me out. And you're like, I don't see it.
Yeah, I didn't understand why at all.
And I was like, you know what? We'll just talk about it when we get to it. But
so,
I hate Mandy episodes so much.
Yeah.
Especially Malice. I mean, Fridging. I mean, Malice. But that's not because of Mandy's fault. I just think episodes, including her, they're just not as well written.
And I would love to hear from other people with other points of view on her. Maybe I'm reading the character wrong. Like, maybe we're just feeding off of each other and like, not seeing this.
I don't know. You don't agree with me all the time.
In some other way, but, like...
I mean, yeah I would definitely like to hear a different framing of this. Like, all I can say is, like, this, from my personal experiences and what I know, this is what I'm seeing, and it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the reason I had troubles putting it out there before was because it didn't have anything to do with her disability, but I felt like it could be construed that I had a problem with her having a disability. And I'm like, no, it's legit just...
It's who she is as a person, unfortunately, or who they're writing her as.
Right.
Because
I would love this if it was like her personality was just slightly changed. But as we said, like, her disability may have created, because she wasn't probably going out drinking.
Oh, yeah.
You know? She wasn't doing any youthful rebellion shit. She was definitely not having sex.
Well, most likely, anyway.
And I don't think that makes you human or anything, but I do think that...
You learn things, and she's learning them now.
Right.
Like, learn things about people and about what people do and don't react to.
But if you're robbed of those interactions, you don't learn it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So...
Anyways.
The ship is fixed. They make the jump. It looks like they're going to be okay.
I don't know. Rush... What I have in my notes, Rush gives Eli some sort of look, and Eli leaves. Like, there's some sort of connection between the two of them.
I think... It's in the room with the stones as Mandy's getting ready to go back?
No, it's like right after Eli talks to Amanda and is like, hey, don't you hate it when you switch really quick? And I'm like, yay, continuity, because that happened to them on Earth a couple times.
Oh, yeah.
But then she's like, I have to go. She's like, I know this is mean, but I hope you need my help again. And Rush is like, sure.
Yeah.
And then she kisses him, which I'm like, come on. Like, you can do the cheek, but he already told you don't. And you kissed him on the fucking lips.
Yeah, well, but it's a girl doing it to a guy, so there's no issues with consent, right? There's still consent issues.
Yeah.
It's still not okay. Anyway.
Ray comes back. He's pretty cold to her when it's Ray as well.
Yeah, and she has this very, like, calm, centered moment of, like, coming back to herself and her body.
Yeah, I like when she's looking at her hand, like, I can move it.
Yeah, and
I
think...
She's just so grateful.
It seems like he sort of... I don't know. I read it as him being like, okay, well, Ray won't do it again either. So, like, if I do need Mandy again, who the hell am I going to get to go?
Right.
Which I don't remember who swaps with her the next. Oh, it's Gin, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Gin. Because they both die when
Gin's body gets killed. Because then Rush and Eli are macking on the same girl and it's a problem.
It's so weird.
It's the weirdest.
I fucking hate Amanda Berry episodes. So it ends with the chair room being empty and they don't. And I wonder why his clothes aren't there. And we need to still talk about Ray's whole storyline, which is not terribly complicated.
Yeah, I mean, it's really about how it's exploring Amanda Perry's disability through the lens of Camille and Sharon.
Right.
Right? Like, if she eats too fast, if she gets emotionally worked up, if she, you know,
right.
All of these things can go horribly wrong.
And I think those are important to have.
And it's super important, and it's super, like, I love how well they handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I love every time Ray is at home, though, because, like, I'm fascinated by her relationship.
What I like is that it's Sharon is very clearly, it doesn't matter what you are, who you look like.
Yeah, you're you.
You're you, and I love you.
And yeah, you're
and
the one that
And that's what
I'm
Amanda
for.
Wants, and that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But who knows if Sharon would have fallen in love with Ray with that barrier there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously for them, like, a part of their relationship has been, like, dreams of traveling and dreams of, you know, going places together. They both speak Chinese. I assume they've traveled, or at least...
Right. And their relationship's been established for, like, 15 years or something like that.
Yeah. It's a very long time.
But it is, I think it's really sweet that, you know, Sharon initially kisses her on the forehead and Camille's like, no.
No, no,
you
no.
can do better than that.
If, like, I'm going to be here, we're not doing it this way.
Right? Like, consent issues aside with that, because, I mean, that's not as bad as, like, sex to me.
Well, yeah, to me, like.
I still think it's cool that Sharon's like, she doesn't even hesitate. She's like, yeah, you're right.
Yep. Okay. Like, yeah. And it is, there's this very distinct, like, there's a smile that Ray gives Sharon that nobody else ever gets from her.
Yeah.
That obviously, like, I assume you would see that even on somebody else's face. Like.
Yeah. It must have been weird for Mary to be there the whole time.
And she is clearly one of those nurses that is, like, an angel from heaven.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she is there to be like, okay, like, you're going to be fine. We're going to talk you through this. I'm going to show you how to do what you need to do. Like,
right. I'll be here most of the time anyways.
And I wonder, like, it's weird to me. I wonder if Amanda has dated people because, like, it doesn't seem like the first time that Mary has, you know, shown someone else how to care for her or feed her.
I would be super cool if she's dated other people. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But they really are playing it off as, like, she only ever loved Rush.
Yeah, and then Rush was gone, and dead wife, and feelings.
And you're like, Rush has been unavailable since you met him.
Yeah.
Don't go for that.
She's a super lovely person. She's right. Very positive and energetic and brilliant. Like,
I can see someone falling in love with her.
I can absolutely see someone, like...
That she also, in turn, would love.
Yeah. Wanting to date her. I mean, then again, maybe she has this string of younger ex-boyfriends, all of whom have paled in comparison to the memory of Nicholas Rush.
Maybe we should write some fanfic just to make ourselves feel better about Amanda's string of boyfriends. Yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot more to say about Ray's thing other than what you had already said.
Yeah, I mean, they, unlike previous episodes with her being back, they don't explore actually their relationship very much.
No.
Apart from them, like, the end scene where Ray being, you know, kind of trapped and alone in the house and Sharon being out without contact for so long definitely freaked her out a little.
Right, because she has an active imagination.
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing where, like, we've never seen Ray really sitting still.
Right.
Like, on Destiny, she's always... drawing or sketching or out talking to someone or, like,
working on plants. Yeah, she's doing something.
Yeah.
Carrying around a clipboard that she somehow got. Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, I think that's the one telling thing from this episode that you get about Ray is that she will let go of control up to a certain point.
And she is very Like, she's very sort of zen. Like, yeah. She can do, you know, she obviously, like, the acting surrounding the reactions waking up in Mandy's body.
Yeah.
Both James's, as brief as it was, and Ray's, is really, like, strong character acting for them. Of, like, when you know you're getting into a situation, how well can you actually prepare yourself mentally for that?
Right.
And how much of it is reacting in the moment and forcing yourself to deal with it.
I like, see this is the Ray that I think of, right?
Yep.
The way she is in this episode. But remember we talked about, like, a couple, the last, like, you know, Divided and one after Divided, that's name is escaping me. We talked about how, like, she's not totally in her right mind. Like, she makes very emotional decisions. She gets really upset. Like, she starts doing drastic things, like, you know, allying with Rush.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, like, volunteering to swap with Amanda was one of those drastic emotional things.
Right. She doesn't come off that way. Like, she does, when she does those things, she tends to go into super cold Ray mode. Yeah. You know it's because it's covering something. But yeah, she does have a certain serenity to her that she can just accept these situations.
Yeah.
But maybe it's all for Sharon, right? Maybe the reason she gets upset is because when it's not for Sharon in her life, what's the point?
Yeah, that's, I mean, we know that to, like, see and tell her parents anything took her, like, 5 minutes.
Right.
As compared to, you know, this woman who she shares her life with. So presumably there's, you know, there's some other issues in her life.
I will point out that they said that she was supposed to be in that body for weeks. So I don't know. I don't know why it took the Nakai so long.
Yeah.
Eh. All right. Plot holes. Plot holes abound. That's what this episode should be called.
Plot holes you could drive a large spaceship through.
Yeah, that's my final thought right there. I don't need to add more than that.
I was just about, I went reaching for Ray's actress's name and came up with Melinda May. Big Na and Robert Carlyle, best actors ever. ABC needs to keep them forever and make me more good shows, please. Yeah. Next.
I think Luis Ferreira is really good, too.
He is really good, and I am sorry that I don't love Young as much as I used to. I don't know.
It's all my fault.
What has happened. One day we will get Cal in here, and
yeah, we are going to have the Young Rush discussion with someone who's actually on Young's side.
During basically all the situations. where can they find us, Boom?
They can find us at sgupodcast.tumblr.com. And we'll talk to you about anything Stargate Universe related.
Yeah. Or generally Stargate related.
Yeah, pretty much anything.
Talk to me about how smart John Shepard is.
Oh, so now you're on the J. Shep ship.
No, still not amused by him, actually.
All right, well, bye, everyone.
Goodbye.